The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week and back to look at the breakout stars of the 2023-2024 season. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host there. And joining me, my co-host as ever, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good, mate. Yeah, very good. So we're recording this on Tuesday, and obviously last night there was a game of complete carnage, wasn't there, in the Premier League?
Carnage Chukwuemeka.
Absolutely. I mean, what wildness we saw. I mean, one of the players who starred and might get a mention across the course of this episode, perhaps. But just to address two things, one good, one bad from that. All right, I'm going to start with the thing I love, and it's rare because it's obviously Chelsea and I'm a Fulham fan, but Alfie Gilchrist celebration and what
incredible,
that moment
wasn't
meant
it?
For him. Like, I was like, that is what football's all about. Like, if you haven't seen yet, Gilchrist comes on as a late sub, scores Chelsea's sixth goal in a 6-0 win over Everton. And it's obviously in the course of the game, a meaningless one, really, apart from rubbing Everton's noses in the dirt. But for Gilchrist, it's like the moment of his life. This lad is Chelsea through and through. He's desperate to make it at Chelsea. And the way he just surges into the crowd, he's celebrating with them. He's looking up at the board after to try and see his name up there to see if he's like what he's saying about his goal. He can't get the smile off his face. And it was just brilliant to see. And I was really pleased for him.
He would have struggled to sleep last night, I think.
Oh, mate, he wouldn't have slept. There's no way he slept.
His dad and his granddad, both season ticket holders at Stamford Bridge, been a Chelsea fan since birth. It was so pure. So pure, absolutely lovely, really nice to see. And just that joy of being in the crowd, the kind of disbelief that it had happened, I think.
It was
such a lovely moment.
It quite literally felt like how you or I might feel scoring for Fulham. Like,
yeah,
literally like a fan scoring a goal moment. And it was, like, he's a great player, fair play to him, and good luck to him too. But on the flip of that, there was amateur hour at Stamford Bridge, and one of the most childish moments I've ever seen in top level football. Noni Madueke felt he had the right to take a penalty despite not being the penalty taker.
I think he thought he'd won it, but he hadn't. It wasn't for the original foul.
Yeah. And then Nico Jackson gets involved, and actually Nico Jackson annoyed me way more than Madueke in the end. Nicholas Jackson's reaction towards Cole Palmer, just to the situation generally, it stunk. It absolutely stunk the place out. And I came away from it thinking, no wonder Pochettino can't manage this team. They're like having a good game for once. And Nicholas Jackson is acting here like, I don't know, it was a bit of ego attached to it. There was a bit of, like, I don't know, it felt a bit spiteful.
Bit,
like,
bit why of desperation attached to it,
desperation?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. It was horrible.
Yeah, it really wasn't nice to see. I mean, there was a full-on scrap for the ball, and you know, Conor Gallagher got involved and gave the ball to Palmer. I was like, what are you all doing? Obviously, Palmer takes the penalties. Weirdly, it was the goal that put Cole Palmer level with Erling Haaland at the top of the Premier League scoring charts. Now, Nicholas Jackson might be a bit frustrated having played as the centre forward and having, you know, missed his own opportunities, but it's starting to claw a reasonable goals tally from this season. I think given a lot of the given a lot of the chat, given a lot of the criticism that came his way early on, and look, rightly so, some of it, less rightly so others, but maybe it was just a question of being like, get the numbers up. Cole Palmer's already got his hat trick, but it doesn't matter. None of that should matter. And weirdly, in the post-match press conference, the players played it down. Cole Palmer was like, it's fine. We had a laugh about it when we got back to the dressing room. Pochettino didn't. Pochettino was livid. And you know what? You say there you feel sorry for Pochettino. I don't. That is, for me, like an indication. And I've been pretty, maybe not ambivalent, but I think there's been a sense of being like, I can understand why Chelsea fans are frustrated. Equally, I think this is going to need time to develop as a project. And Pochettino maybe should get that time. Yesterday was the first time I thought, nah, can't do it. He can't do it. Because a team with boundaries and a team with discipline don't do that. It doesn't happen. And I think that was the first time I was like, well, he might have to go. Because someone who has more control and more ability to actually be like, no, no, this is what we're doing, not letting the dressing room run riot, actually might be the answer for Chelsea. And so yesterday, and watching that was the first time I was like, ooh, he might have to go. And it's weird that we've come to two very different standpoints on that. Because I thought that was immediately, my thought was manager. That's on the manager. And I don't know what more there is to say. Obviously, we shouldn't be talking about this on the back of Chelsea's, you know, best win of the campaign. It's actually been an okay 2024 for Chelsea. Only the top three in the Premier League have picked up more points than them since the turn of the year. And actually, this is the point where I've gone, they might have to change manager.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably change manager either way here, but I was just looking at it thinking, well, if this is what we're seeing publicly with how these players act, I can't even imagine what Pochettino's putting up with behind the scenes. And like, it's all very well saying you've got to run a stern household. As somebody who's got two kids, I understand how hard that can be. He's got 25 of them. He's got 25 kids he's got to manage at Chelsea, and they're all earning more money than he is. So if Dylan and Reese were running around this house,
bringing in the income,
bringing in, I don't know, 300 grand each a year, I'll be in big trouble, mate. I mean, I'd probably have a better house, but I wouldn't have any respect at all. And it kind of felt a little bit like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a strange game. And I'm sure it's not going to be the end of, we'll hear about just about that game or about Chelsea in particular. But let's get on to the episode. You're going to start us off. You're going to take three players from the Premier League in part one here who've had breakout seasons. And then I'm going to take us across Europe. I've picked a player from each of the other six, if you will, to discuss.
You've done six.
Yeah, I've done six. I've done six.
Mate, you
but
do
only
make
one
life
from
hard
each.
For yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought it'd be unfair to leave out the Primera and the Eredivisie. So a couple of players we're gonna talk about, but you're gonna get stuck in with three from the Premier League and we'll go from there.
Okay, so at three, we've got Connor Bradley at Liverpool Football Club, 20 years old. He's made 22 appearances this season, one goal, which doesn't really matter, it's not his job. Six assists though, quite impressive. He's actually nudging Trent Alexander-Arnold in the back here, telling him to go and play somewhere else. Go and move into midfield, mate, because I've got this side now. Like the right side, I can deal with this. Let me have it. It's interesting when you look at Connor Bradley's upbringing. He grew up playing Gaelic football and being a great cross-country runner. And I think that once you understand both of those things and what you need to be successful in both of those sports, and then you watch the way that Connor Bradley plays football, it all comes together. Not technically, obviously, with the way that he's literally kicking the ball, but in terms of he's got energy to run all day long. He's got ability to go inside and out, but equally, he's so tough. He's not afraid to confront anyone. He won't back down either, even if it's like a big name in his face. He's not backing down. But he's also got this other side to him where he seems very down to earth. I've spoken to someone at Liverpool who says he genuinely is such a good lad. And he just wants to be the best version of himself that he can. And that's really encouraging to see in a 20-year-old Premier League footballer. To do as well as he has in a season like this at Liverpool is also especially tough because there has been a high level of expectation. Yet the players around him have been changing quite a lot because of all the injuries and adaptations to the team that have been happening. Hasn't been that consistent a lot of the time in terms of what Connor Bradley's been working with. Might be a different goalkeeper, might be a different centre-back. But it's really hard not to love Conor Bradley's enthusiasm and his style of play. It's been a fantastic breakout season. And whoever the new manager is should absolutely love him so that this isn't the last we've heard of him this term.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting there and thinking about Gaelic football and how it's played and the amount of getting up and down that you have to do around that pitch. It is probably the most difficult sport I've ever played in terms of having to the fitness to do it is so difficult. The pitch is so big. The spaces you have to cover are so vast. And it does make a lot of sense, as you say, you know, getting up and down that wing and seeing to do it kind of effortlessly makes far more sense in the context of growing up. But I agree. I think he's been phenomenal. And I think that that versatility and ability to do different things as well is impressive. It's going to be intriguing. I mean, we spoke last week about Amorim and what that might look like at Liverpool, whether he's given the license to just bomb up and down in that right wing back role and really do the hard yards in that regard. Or if he's asked to play a slightly different role, maybe a slightly more conservative role as a right centre back and actually kind of lock down that area one-on-one, who knows? But he's also played as a winger for Northern Ireland, scored a goal against Scotland when he did that recently, which is interesting. Something we've seen at times, I think, from Andy Robertson as well, playing for Scotland, playing higher up and trying to affect the game in the final third. That shows the quality that's on show here immediately. And yes, okay, the depth pool of Northern Ireland isn't quite as great as that of Scotland, and you have to put your best players in positions where they can impact the game, fine. But I think that sense of a youngster being so trusted right away, and the way that the Liverpool fans have just been like, oh, it's fine. You know, we spoke on here in January about the fact that when Fulham were playing Liverpool, we were thinking, oh, maybe we could get Conor Bradley, maybe attack him. He's not played that much football. Mm. You know, yes, he had a really good season at Bolton out on loan, but he hasn't played all that much top flight football. He was brilliant across those two games. The idea of now a team looking at this Liverpool side and be like, yeah, we'll target Conor Bradley is almost laughable. And I think that shows the space or the distance he's come in such a short space of time.
Yeah, definitely massive growth from this player. There's no doubt about that. But he was good before that, even at Bolton. Obviously, they were crowing about him when he went out on loan. At number two is, no surprise, Kobbie Mainoo of Manchester United. 18 years old. Ridiculous what he's done since coming into this team. He's now made 27 appearances. He's got 3 goals and he's got 2 assists. He actually made his debut last season, but this is the one that is the breakthrough, and let's face it, his life is never going to be the same again. There's no going back to his old life from here because he's a star. If you think about his goals, the Newport one probably passes people by, but the goal against Wolves was a big one, and that beauty against Liverpool will always stand out for United fans particularly. But obviously, this isn't a player that's about goals. He's got ridiculous running ability. He covers so much ground and probably one of the saving graces actually for Erik ten Hag this season is that all the spaces that are left for United, sometimes it's Mainoo that's able to get across and actually eat that space up because he's got such good running power. But for me, it's that ability in tight spaces that he's got. It is absolutely out of this world. It's almost as if sometimes Kobbie Mainoo waits for 3 players to actually crowd him because he wants to see if he can break out. And if he can, the whole game opens up. He is extraordinarily good at getting out of little areas where, you know, teams do crowd him because they know how good he is. And they're like, there'll be 2 round him already. And a third comes and joins in all the time. But Mainoo takes it all in his stride, quite literally. He was only introduced properly to the Premier League like 4 or 5 months ago, right? And in that period, he's made himself indispensable. He's so good, in fact, that United are going to go into the market this summer to find a player to play alongside him, to allow him to grow, to allow him to succeed at the highest level. They've got to find the perfect midfield partner. Not easy to do, and I don't particularly trust him based on past references, but this is a new Man United. It's the Ineos phase, and maybe they can get it right going forward. But the other thing with Mainoo is his confidence. You look at him, and he just takes it, you know, again in his stride because he's just not worried. He knows that he has the ability to play there. He's not fazed by anything. I saw some quotes from Berbatov calling him courageous, which I thought was a really good word to describe him.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, I think that's the almost the perfect word. He also said he reminds him of Paul Scholes, which I don't totally see, but I understand where he's coming from. The other thing with Mainoo is the timing of his tackles is superb. Even if he's going to ground, he'll get it. And his tactical awareness is very good as well. This lad's going to get a new contract because he's one of the only feel-good stories to come out of Man United season. They can't bear the thought of losing him. Kobbie Mainoo is an absolute breakout star of this season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And the discussion around him potentially going to the Euros, or I think maybe more than potentially at this point, is, you know, testament to how far he's come. I don't think many Manchester United fans, never mind many Premier League fans, would have been able to tell you who Kobbie Mainoo was at the start of the season. You know, only those who have spent their time digging into the depths of youth football and spending that time, but was given his opportunity and grabbed it with both hands. And the only question mark, I suppose, is how he deals with that limelight and the fact that teams will be now looking to shut him down in a way that perhaps they, you know, at the start were like, right, let him have the ball. He's okay. We won't worry about him too much. Mm. As that profile grows and that progression grows, how teams try to target him, how he deals with those things. But everything we've seen so far, and in the big games, he's come to the fore as well. Everything we've seen so far suggests that this is, you know, just the start of what could be an incredible career for Kobbie Mainoo. So, yeah, I mean, there isn't much to come away from apart from he's just been sensational when he's played. A light in the darkness, I think, in this Manchester United midfield, which has really struggled this season. Casemiro having a dreadful year. We know the limitations on arrest of a lot of these midfielders. So, you know, Mainoo coming in and basically establishing himself as an unquestionable starter in this Manchester United team is a pretty remarkable place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it takes me on to number one, the breakout star of the Premier League this season. And it's absolutely no surprise that it's Cole Palmer. 21 years old, 41 appearances this season. In those 41 games, he's got 25 goals and 13 assists. And he's playing in a poor team. That is an outstanding return from Cole Palmer. He's joint top goal scorer now with Haaland in the Premier League. He'll surely be named as the young player of the year. Palmer's scored 33% of Chelsea's goals in the Premier League this season. That's the highest contribution of any player in the league. And it's absolutely outrageous.
Where would they be without him? They'd be
heading towards the Championship, mate. I don't think I'm joking. Like, they would be down there just above Everton, probably. Like, the team they beat 6-0 last night, they would probably be bouncing around between somewhere like Everton and probably behind our Fulham, like, be somewhere in that region. Yeah. Cole Palmer has carried this team. They were extremely wasteful in the transfer market, have been ever since Todd Boehly came in. But Palmer's an exception to the rule, and he's almost like, well, he's got them out of trouble, really, because at least they've got something to show for their money. A fantastic signing. The big job for Chelsea will be to actually find a way to build around this guy, because if you're going to win anything, then he's the guy that's going to take you there. Leads you on, really, to think, well, hang on, what's this guy's international prospects? Because as it stands, Cole Palmer's not actually getting minutes in the England setup. He didn't play against Belgium and Brazil. He has had a few minutes before. I think it was against Malta. But when it comes to Gareth Southgate choosing his squad for the Euros, not only does he have to find room for Cole Palmer in that squad, I mean, he should probably be in the starting lineup. I don't know how it happens, but this is one of the most informed footballers in the entire world. And we're 2 months away from England kicking off their campaign at the Euros against Serbia. And in that 2 months, Southgate needs to really consider where to play the guy and how to get him in there somehow. I'm not saying he'll be a starter for that game. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Harry Kane's going to lead the line. Phil Foden needs to play. Saka needs to play. Bellingham needs to play. But there's big question marks here. I mean, I don't think it's looking good for Marcus Rashford being in the squad at all. And I don't think he can have any arguments really about that. Even Jack Grealish, I think he'll be sweating a little bit on how he's going to fit in. And there's already this conundrum up top about Ivan Toney and Ollie Watkins. Does he take both? Does he take one? Which one? And now that Cole Palmer's coming into this equation, you're thinking, well, he's got to fit all this together somehow. Cole Palmer has to go to the Euros. I don't know how many minutes he'll get there, but I hope we see a fair bit of him, because when a player is this confident and this at ease with that level of football so early, you have to let them go. You have to let them play, because this could be his best years. We're at a point where half those teams at the Euros won't know what to do with him. They wouldn't have seen enough with him, of him playing on a regular basis to know how to deal with him. And these are the moments. I think back when Rooney burst on the scene, when Owen burst onto the scene, those first few years were the most exciting because they were so raw, but equally the players that they were coming up against hadn't come up against them before. And Palmer's in that stage. So whereas they've, you know, the rivals would have either played against or seen plenty of Saka and Foden, etc., this is your gem. This is a bit special because you've got something up your sleeve here. Maybe a little bit like Kobbie Mainoo. But yeah, Cole Palmer, very, very special. An unbelievable breakout season. And a player that I'm not sure how can actually continue to live up to these expectations he set for himself.
I mean, I suppose the question, I don't think there's any doubt that Cole Palmer sits at the top of this list after what he's achieved this year. The only question, I think, is, why did City let him go? And we discussed it at the, you know, at the start of the season when you're like, okay, you know, City are always actually quite good when players are like, no, I want to leave now. I want to go and make my way elsewhere. They trust themselves. They trust the process in terms of who's coming through next, about who is going to come in and slot into the system. But in a year where they lost Riyad Mahrez, it does feel like Cole Palmer could have played a massive role for this City side. And, you know, again, where Chelsea would be if they hadn't made that late move for Cole Palmer is one thing. The question maybe on the flip side of that is, how far could City be clear if Cole Palmer had stayed at the club?
Yeah.
Or would he have been able to actually do this, getting potentially slightly limited minutes in a way that he hasn't got at Chelsea, has been able to open the door and let himself fly? It just feels funny. And, you know, the more you watch him, the more it becomes sort of like, wow, City might have dropped one on this, because...
Well, he just wouldn't have played 41 games for Man City this season.
No.
It's as simple as that. And I think you've also got to balance it out with, they've got Oscar Bob coming through. And I feels like that was one of the reasons, knowing they also had him coming through, was one of the reasons that Cole Palmer was allowed to go. Look, he's a good player. He's doing well. There's good signs there. Obviously, it's tough to actually break through and make it at Man City, but it could just be that they feel that, yep, Cole Palmer, very, very good, but we might have something even better coming.
Well, if Oscar Bob is even better than this, then I think the world needs to probably watch out for him, because the level that Cole Palmer has shown throughout this season in a struggling team around him who have failed to get things going, he has just been the spark man. He has been the conduit for almost everything good about Chelsea, and he deserves immense credit, and that's why he's top of this list. Thank you very much. That was a very good, quite a solid three there from the Premier League.
It was quite easy, to be honest, mate.
Yeah, I think there really has been a sense that there have been three standout candidates for these. I think Murillo at Nottingham Forest is probably a little bit unlucky to miss out. I think he's had a tremendous first campaign in the Premier League and has really stepped up in one of the, you know, the brightest lights in a difficult season for Forest. But equally, it's hard to argue with any of the three that you've
Yeah,
put
I mean,
in.
Probably, you know, he is a good player, and I think he'll probably get a big transfer, Mario, but the fact he's at Nottingham Forest probably went against him here. If he'd have been signed for one of the bigger teams and had that impact, maybe he'd have made the list. It's just the harshness. I mean, you know, Kwanzaa at Liverpool was at a breakout year. You think back to what Lewis Miley was doing earlier in the season. Like, yeah, he should probably get a shout out here too. It's tough, but I think these three is almost like, there's almost no argument you can make that this isn't the top three.
Yeah, I agree. All right, after the break, we're going to be going to the continent to have a look at some of the breakout stars from across Europe. Don't go anywhere.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for Jack Collins to do some rankings. Not really a ranking here, is it? Because you're picking one from each league, but still similar feel to it. Don't envy you because that's sixth league. You've had to wade your way through to make sure that you have picked the best breakout star. But good luck to you, mate. We're all ears.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got two honourable mentions for each, but I'm not going to literally talk about them. I'm just going to read them out because otherwise we'll be here all day. So we'll start in La Liga and wanted to give a shout out to Savio, the winger at Girona, 20 years old, came in on loan this season and looks Manchester City bound. There's another one to argue that Cole Palmer point. But yeah, he's had a phenomenal season. And Javi Guerra at Valencia, who's been at the heart of that kind of youth revolution that Ruben Baraja has put in at Valencia. They're into the European spots, also 20 years old, centre midfielder, and one that I think we'll be seeing in the Spanish national team before too long. A really, really good footballer. But the breakout star of this season in La Liga has been Pau Cubarsí, the 17-year-old centre-back at Barcelona. It's almost impossible to chart just how impressive this rise is because you look back to the start of the season, right? And Barcelona's centre-back core looked pretty secure, right? They had Ronald Araujo and Jules Koundé, two of the best young centre-backs in the game who, you know, Barcelona fans were delighted with as a partnership. Yes, Koundé out on the right has been, you know, here and there a little bit, but I think most people were pretty secure that was the starting centre-back pairing if they could for Barcelona. And then backing those up, the experience of Iñigo Martínez signed from Athletic Club on a free, a national team starting option for Spain, and Andreas Christensen, who starts for Denmark and won the Champions League with Chelsea back in 2021. They were comfortable enough that they let Eric Garcia go out on loan to Girona and they fired Moroccan starlet Chadi Riyad off to Betis on loan with an option to buy. Right, it all seemed pretty settled. So for us to be 9 months on, and to have a 17-year-old La Masia graduate as the cornerstone of this defence, and one of the first names, I think, right now on the team sheet, is pretty remarkable. When the opportunity arose, various injuries, performance issues, Cubarsí took that chance and grabbed it with both hands. He hasn't looked back at all. Centre-back is not normally where you throw a 16-year-old in a time of crisis, but Xavi took that risk and he's witnessed the rewards firsthand. There's loads to like about what Cubarsí brings to the table. 6'1", probably still has some space to grow there as well. I think that he has a nice kind of frame for being a centre-back. He's a little bit lightweight still, but also I think as he fills out and that grows and there is that sense that he will grow into that frame as he gets older. A 17-year-old, it's very difficult to kind of predict exactly what they're going to look like, but I think that the safe bet is that Cubarsí will become a more imposing physical presence. And that will add to the fact that he is already a brilliant all-round defender. But it's the passing ability, right? That is what catches everybody's eye. And constantly, the continuous circulation of the ball is stunning. And some of those passes that he fires into feet are breathtaking. They split teams open from the back and they open up games for the players in front of him. He is in the 88th percentile for passes completed amongst centre-backs, according to FB Ref. He is 17 years old, and this is what he is delivering week after week after week. And Cubarsí and Araujo is now Barcelona's starting centre-back pairing. They play tonight in the Champions League, and maybe he might have an absolute stinker and I'm going to look like an idiot tomorrow. But I think we're talking about a player who is forcing his way into the conversation for the Euros. At 17 years old, we're talking about a player who has usurped some pretty big names to make sure that he is secure within this team straight away. And a player that Xavi absolutely adores. He spoke about the fact that he sees Cubarsí having the ball and he just feels settled and relaxed. Again, he's 17 years old. And Xavi is like, cool, Victor Osimhen's running at him with the ball. I have no worries whatsoever. That is an incredible place to be.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing what he's done across the course of this campaign, to have become so familiar with the player, and to understand what he's going to become in such a short space of time is outstanding to do that at a club of this stature. And yeah, I think more impressive is the fact that he's a defender, because most players that do have a breakout are forward thinking players, because there's less,
especially this young, right?
There's less risk attached. You know, if you're usually a wide player or a striker, to be honest, if you're 17 and getting your chances at that level. I mean, if you think back to Ansu Fati, if you look at Lamine Yamal, like, these are the type of players that you would expect to just be let free, because at the end of the day, if you're good at dribbling and you can set up chances and you can open up spaces, you could pretty much do that at any time. Not saying you could do it consistently across 90 minutes of a game, but you'd be thrown in for 15 minutes to try and win a game, and you might get more chance on the back of that. To go into a team at the heart of the defence, and you are one of the biggest clubs in the world, and your team is actually struggling with its status of being one of the best teams in the world, and you can't afford to fall off anymore. For you to be the guy that comes in and handle that and actually make the team better is remarkable. And yeah, Pau Kubasi is absolutely, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, what a player, basically, what a player. Let's go to Italy, let's go to Serie A. And quick shout out for Kenan Yildiz, the 18-year-old Turkish sort of number 10 second striker at Juve, who's brought a little bit of spark to Juventus in a campaign where they have really, really lacked it. And also to Joshua Zirkzee, 22, at Bologna, been part of this Bologna story that has been truly quite remarkable across the course of it, and looks pretty set to get a Dutch call up the Euros. But I'm going for Albert Gudmundsson, 26-year-old striker, second striker at Genoa, Icelandic. I love a late bloomer, and there's been few better across Europe than Genoa's Icelandic man up top this season. He's formed a devastating partnership with Mateo Rategi, who probably could have been here in his own right, to be honest. But Gudmundsson's ability to drift in and out of spaces, to drop deep, to create that separation and get away from defenders, reminds me of Paulo Dybala or a less clinical Lautaro Martinez. And that is really, really high praise. He's incredibly intelligent. He's brilliant on the ball. And he has that ability to just sort of jink past players like they're not even there. He had a sensational year last year up top as Genoa promoted from Serie B, but I don't think anyone was paying all that much attention. But he's carried that over into the top flight. 15 goals, 4 assists across all competitions in 32 games. But those numbers probably don't even do justice to quite how complete his game seems to be. Whilst Rategi operates kind of more as a standard number 9, Gudmundsson's given license to roam wherever he wants. And he is positionally quite versatile, which helps with this. But that ability to link the midfield and the attack, find the crucial pass and pry teams apart, it's really quite something to behold. And if there's nothing on, he's quite comfortable driving at teams, using that aforementioned dribbling ability to sort of draw fouls in precarious positions or to open up games by taking opponents out of the equation. Now, there's significant interest. Spurs, West Ham and Aston Villa have all sent scouts to watch him. Roma and Juventus are also reportedly keen. But the reports out of Italy from Gazzetta, and most importantly, state that Gudmundsson has his heart set on joining Inter this summer, rejecting other advances in anticipation of joining Simone Inzaghi's Nerazzurri for the next campaign. Up front in a 2, probably as the rotator for Lautaro Martinez, just like he's played at Genoa. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, look, how much of Genoa have I seen this season? 3-4 games, so I can't offer too much insight here. And when I've watched him, it's really to keep an eye on Jed Spence. So not in the market.
You've been watching him wrong, my friend.
It's for transfer purposes, mate. I've got to keep an eye on people and how they're getting on.
Well, but, I mean, talking of transfer purposes, there is that significant Premier League interest, and the Spurs one, I think in particular, makes quite a lot of sense in terms of what he brings and that ability to just beat a man one-on-one. Head coach Harry Brooks often talking about how Spurs haven't got that many players who are good at creating separation in the final third, being the kind of difference maker when things are tight. Gudmundsson is definitely one of those kind of players.
Yeah, it's interesting. But as you say, a bit of a late bloomer. So sometimes teams are a bit scared to go for those because they're thinking, well, why has it taken this long? And is it a one-off? So, but yeah, really interesting. And certainly a name that, if not as familiar as Pau Kubasi, certainly somebody that we're going to know more about coming soon.
Yeah, there will be significant movement, I imagine, on that one in the transfer market in the summer. Right, let's go to France and Ligue 1. And a quick shout out to two fullbacks from honorable mentions. Thiago Santos, who we've already talked about a fair bit, 21-year-old right back at Lille from Portugal. And Bradley Locco, 21-year-old left back at Brest, who plays his football for the France national youth teams at the moment, but is also alleged, by belief, for DR Congo. They've both had brilliant campaigns, Locco in particular, picking up a lot of interest across the board. But I'm going to go for a different defender, centre-back, Sengutu Magassa, who plays for Monaco and also for the France youth teams, although I do believe he's eligible for Mali. An excellent young French defender breaking through at Monaco. Consider me shocked. The production line at Monaco has been carving out top talent for quite some time, and Magassa feels like he's the next one up. It's a little bit of a gamble, this one, and some people might question it because he has spent a little bit of time injured this season. But when he has played, mostly on the left side of Monaco's back three, I really think he's been quite excellent. Super comfortable with the ball at his feet. You might imagine from someone who spent quite a bit of time at youth level playing in central midfield, but his ability to engage attackers directly and that rapid adaptation to playing as part of a defensive three, I think it's really been quite impressive. I really like the way that he carries the ball out of the back, with that midfield experience at youth level very obviously on show here. He's comfortable taking players on, and the way that Monaco play, they're very ball heavy, allows him to pick up the ball in these deeper spaces and carry his team up the pitch. He's the youngest member of this defensive unit, but it's very clear that the other players in it recognize that ability to progress play, and they allow him to drive forward when they get the ball. He likes a big switch too. There's a right foot on the left-hand side. It's something that opens up quite regularly for him. And he pulls it off more often than not. Defensively, I think there's still a little bit of work to do. He's really aggressive in his one-on-one defending, and he can be caught out at times with his positioning, partly due to the system he's in, and he's kind of asked to be that front foot defender. But there have been some really impressive showings too, and notably against Ousmane Dembele when Monaco played PSG, where he played really, really well against one of the trickiest customers in the game. Now, I don't think he should be looking to go anywhere just yet, and I don't know exactly where he ends up, if he ends up moving back into a defensive midfield kind of role in the future. But at the moment, this system seems to really suit him. I think that the growth is going to continue, but he has felt like a real breakout star this season for Monaco. And I think that Monaco might have another star on their hands.
Yeah, how much has he played then across the course of the season? Like how has he worked his way into that setup? Because they've obviously like had a, they probably come into the season, had a pretty good idea of what they were going to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, he was given the license to kind of start. He started the season really well, played, I think, the first 8 games for Monaco. And then he dropped off a little bit. There was a bit of injury history. He's played 18 times in Ligue 1. So not bad, about half and half. But he's, you know, he got a knee injury after a really good start. And he kind of struggled to force his way back into the team a little bit after that. And so it's sort of been a bit here and there since. But when he has played, I think he's been really impressive. And obviously this is Monaco side is a very good team. And you kind of look at the way that they set up and the talent they have in those areas. For him to be, you know, near it is impressive. The other thing is that once they switched out of the three at the back, and there has been a couple of movements in formation across the course of this Monaco season, he doesn't quite have a spot, yeah. If that makes sense. Because In the kind of thing with Mario Panenka and him on the left of that three, it felt very secure. But I don't think I would quite yet trust him. The way that he likes to break out and actually step forward and be that front foot defender, I don't think quite he's ready to play in a two yet. And does seem that when they play with four at the back, that Magassa struggles to find a space in it. But the early signs, I think, are really good on this one. So again, it's a bit of a gamble. But I think he's been really, really impressive and gone under the radar a bit because of the way that it's a little bit been stop-start, but yeah, a good player.
He has gone under the radar because I didn't realise he'd been that good because of exactly that reason, mate. So fair enough. We'll trust your judgment. What league are we at next, mate?
Let's go to Germany, shall we? And the Bundesliga. Shout out for Victor Boniface, 23-year-old Leverkusen striker from Nigeria. Leverkusen's joint top scorer this campaign, but has missed a significant part of it due to injury. And Jamie Bynoe-Gittens as well, 19-year-old English/Barbadian winger.
Superstar.
At Dortmund, who you very much like.
Love him.
But I'm going for Maximilian Bayer, 21-year-old striker at Hoffenheim, German striker. 13 goals and 7 assists in 28 Bundesliga games for the youngster. Have him on the verge of a call-up to Germany's Euro 2024 squad. And I think once you dig beneath the surface, he's quite clearly the breakout star of this year's Bundesliga season. He's brilliant, especially in transition, where he uses that lightning quick pace to get beyond opposition defenders. But those numbers are even more impressive when you realize he hasn't taken any penalties. So he's working quite nicely around 0.6 non-penalty goals and assists a game. And the fact that this is his first full season in the Bundesliga, having been recalled from a 2-year loan spell at Hannover last summer. He plays off big Wout Weghorst, and he's the man expected to run the channels, take advantage of any flicks past the defence, the Andy Johnson to a Bobby Zamora, if you will. He's right-footed, but he operates off the left, moves into those spaces in a little way that's not too dissimilar to Timo Werner, although I think Bayer's finishing at this point looks a bit more consistent, which is a good thing. There's also a fair bit of striker's instinct about him. He has that knack of ghosting into the right place at the right time. I saw the official Bundesliga website compared him to a young Thomas Müller when he won Rookie of the Month back in February. And whilst that comparison might be a bit lofty, I can see where they're coming from. He has a brilliant work rate, excellent ability to read the game, and a dash time to rival the quickest defenders. I don't think it's any wonder that he's on the radar of Julian Nagelsmann ahead of this summer. And Germany great Miroslav Klose recently backed him to make an impact in the Euros. We all know what Klose did. He is Germany's all-time top scorer. That's pretty high praise.
Yeah, it definitely is, mate. I mean, the thing is as well with this league, it is a good place. When things are going for you, you can quickly make an impact.
There is space in transition as well in the Bundesliga. It's worth bearing that in mind.
Yeah.
So when a player who is quick and has the ability to take advantage of those things explodes into life, they can rack up quite good numbers pretty quickly. But I quite like everything about Bayer's game. He feels like he's moving the right direction. Links to Liverpool already. I don't know if that's quite right now. And obviously it's going to depend on who comes in. But that interest is there for a reason at this point, I think.
Could Guirassy not be considered and having a breakout?
Yeah, he probably could. He probably could. I think that we discussed him at the top, a couple of episodes, before Christmas, I think, and about players that were really shining.
Yeah.
I hesitate to call it a breakout year.
I think the only argument I'd make on this is like the football world now knows fully about Guirassy, and the fact that there's been no let up with his output has been, for me, really, really impressive. And he's going to make a big move. That's the only argument I can. It's a different kind of breakout. It's a different way of comparing it. And that's
I would argue that Guirassy's breakout year came at Rennes. Like, that was when I started to take notice of who he was and what he was doing, right?
Yeah, I think this is where there comes levels of where you consider the breakout to come. Like, you might have been aware of him, but I think a lot of the world has only just become aware of him in the last 6 months and now is like watching his goals and is like, oh yeah, £15 million, get me this bloke up front for insert club. I think just as an alternate view, I think, if you're going to look at other players in their 20s and look at late bloomers, Guirassy is going to be one of those that I think could come into that bracket, but Bayer obviously deserves to be widely considered too.
Yeah, I think if those are, this just depends on what your definition of a breakout year is. I think for me, I would say that Guirassy had already broken out. You could probably argue like someone like a Florian Wirtz could probably be in here. He's had the campaign that has put his name up in lights, but I think it would be unfair to not consider last year as Florian Wirtz's breakout year, when those first kind of roots started to appear. But, you know, that's a question up for up for debate. I'm going to go quickly to the Eredivisie, where I wanted to put a shout out for Malik Tillman, who has been one of the most creative players in Europe this year, the US MNT attacking midfielder, 21 years old at PSV, and Jakuba Minta, who in recent weeks has really started to up the gears for Feyenoord. 19-year-old winger on loan from Newcastle, plays for the Gambia and did so in AFCON. Suddenly looks like there could be a player that we're suddenly like, ooh, Premier League potentially ready next season. He's really exciting. I really like Minta. And might just solve a need for Newcastle in a time of financial insecurity.
I think he'll play, mate. I think we'll see him next season, yeah.
I do too, and I really do like him. I think he's very fun. But I'm going to give it to Johan Bakayoko, 20 years old, PSV winger, Belgian. 12 goals and 14 assists in 44 games. He did get a fair bit of playing time last year, but a lot of it came from the bench, and he's really cemented himself, I think, as a starter this season. However, obviously, when PSV signed Hirving Lozano in the summer, there was kind of a question of being like, oh, are they still not comfortable with Bakayoko being the main man? And Bakayoko went, nah, you're all right. I'm the guy. And I think that's why I think this is his breakout campaign. PSV have been absolutely electric, right? Across the board, they've been sensational. And his ability to go one-on-one with players, his ability to drive at defenders, that strength that he has in one-on-one duels, and his kind of creative sense in dropping deep and finding the right areas, I think has been absolutely massive and a huge part of why PSV have felt almost unstoppable at times this season. I really like him. And when he came through, obviously there was, you know, big upheaval at PSV because they lost Cody Hakpo and Noni Madueke in the same window. Back in January 2023, I think it was. And it was sort of like, oh, is Bakayoko going to be the next man up? And it felt like that kind of sense to be like, you know, last summer there was interest and Brentford, I think, made a bid that was turned down on the final day, or PSV accepted and he rejected it to stick around. It felt like that was a kind of like, okay, no, I am going to go and do it here. And where we are right now, that looks like one of the smartest moves that you could have made. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to Brentford and Burnley. I think we're involved as well in that bidding war. But I think now the team's looking at Johan Bakayoko, Champions League caliber teams. And rightly so, because what he's shown this year, drifting off that right-hand flank with his left foot, creating, scoring, being a kind of force in the attacking third time and time and time again for PSV, has been such a crucial part of why they've been almost completely dominant across the season, I think, in the Netherlands, but also I thought they were excellent in the Champions League as well in many ways. So what I like about Bakayoko is that kind of dynamic nature, the fact that he is never afraid to go at his defender. He can go inside, he can go outside, he makes things happen. And I think the sky is pretty much the limit. We're probably talking about a player who might well be a starter now for Belgium in the Euros. We're talking about a player who has the opportunity to put his name up in even more headlights at that tournament. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that he's going to be on the plane as long as, you know, nothing happens to him in the final weeks of the season. We're in a really nice place, and Bakayoko has really kind of made this season his own, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've just done recently an episode on the best wingers in football, and he is a player that is a bit of a throwback. I think if you were to just go back to the 90s and stick him out on the wing in a 4-4-2 and tell him to get down the wing, beat his man and stick a ball into the box, he'd have been more than capable of doing that. Yet he can also play the modern game and change his style of play up accordingly. What he will do is he'll just throw the entire balance of a defence completely off because of his agility. There's a way that he can move with the ball, sway his body. It's marvelous. It's one of the things that makes a breakout star so exciting. And this is one of the things I said before. There aren't many defenders you get as breakout stars because it's the young, exciting ones are usually forward players. And it's no surprise you get players like this cropping up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that ability to cross has been such a potent weapon. He is such a brilliant crosser of the ball. It's phenomenal. But we're going to finish in the Primeira Liga in Portugal. I want to give a shout out to Alan Varela, who 22-year-old centre midfielder at Porto. Actually, all three of these are centre midfielders from Argentina. And Gustavo Sarr, who is a 19-year-old Portuguese starlet playing at Famalicão, who has been really impressive in a number of different positions, so very much the linchpin of that midfield this year. Very impressive. But the answer is João Neves, 19-year-old centre midfielder at Benfica. Basically, he's a joke. Seixal delivers again, and maybe the best of all. João Neves is, for my money, the breakout star of this year across any league in Europe. This kid is the real deal. He's probably the best midfielder I've seen emerge since Gavi and Pedri. And there are big similarities to the former, I think, in particular. A 19-year-old is the heart and soul of this Benfica side. He is absolutely everything to Benfiquistas. They lost Enzo Fernandez in the middle last January, and it opened the door for a sensation to emerge. Orkan Kökçü, a player we really like, who was, you know, a major part of an excellent Feyenoord side, can't get a sniff in the middle. He was signed in the summer to fill a void. He can't get near the team. Neves does everything. He dictates games. He dribbles more than anyone else. He draws more fouls than anyone else. He wins more tackles than anyone else. He makes more blocks than anyone else. He completes more passes than anyone else. He wins over 60% of his aerial duels, despite the fact that he's 5'9". There are almost no weaknesses at all to his game. He's a joy to watch on and off the ball. One of those very rare players, a bit Bernardo Silva-esque, that you could drop into any team in the world and he would succeed. Small stature, unrelenting engine, devastating desire to win the ball back, beautiful technical ability in possession, glorious understanding of the game, and the brightest of futures. This boy is a star.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's probably fair. You've hyped him up massively there, but he probably can fulfill it and should expect it. He's an extraordinary footballer. The only fear I have with him is what happens next. He's so young and he's so talked about right now, and so many big clubs looking at him. Oh, I just hope his next move works out right and that the timing of that is right. You know, it's thankfully, you know, when players leave Portugal, they typically do it at the right time and they'll be cautious about it. But we've obviously seen big players not go down the right pathways, and that their potential can take time to come through. This one, I don't want that to happen. I don't want to be waiting. I want him to stay there until he knows he's got it absolutely spot on. And whether he ends up in at one of the Manchester clubs, whether he goes to join one of the big clubs in Spain.
I don't really like the chat, for what it's worth, of him being the partner to Kobbie Mainoo. I don't think that's the move.
He's not good
for
enough.
For my money. I just think they might be slightly too similar in profile.
Yeah.
And that worries me a little bit.
I mean, it's also a little bit dangerous having a 19-year-old and an 18-year-old playing alongside each other.
Yeah,
as good as it could, it could be absolutely amazing. It could just be a bit much for them. And that club's already got enough to deal with in terms of expectations and failing to live up to them. Having two starlets like that side by side at that club just doesn't feel right. If it was a different team, I'd probably have no problem with it. But right now, I don't feel that's what they need.
That's a bit of a pressure cooker, isn't it? I just think that they do a lot of the same things. I think Sean Evans is better than Kobbie Mainoo at pretty much all of them. But I think they do a lot of the same things well. And perhaps you need someone who's just going to cover the rest of it to be able to sit next to them and be able to allow them to breathe and flourish. You don't necessarily want two midfielders doing exactly the same thing at the base. So that would be the only concern I would have with that link. But again, I think he'd thrive almost anywhere. I'm just not sure where, you need to get the partner right for him as well. And I think Florentino Luis has done a very good job of just allowing Neves' strengths to shine through at pretty much every occasion. That's going to be the question for him, who he plays next to and in what system. That's where the kind of question mark lies. But I can't see anything but him being, you know, one of the best centre midfielders in the world for the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Very good, mate. I enjoyed that. The six leagues was worth it.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate it. We will finish this up in part three, where Dean has a little bit of guru wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Ranks AFC. It's time for part three and some
guru wisdom.
What you got for me, Dean?
Well, I'm actually talking about the boys today, Dylan and Reese. It's only a very short guru wisdom today. I just wanted to enlighten you on a couple of football purchases that I've made this week. The first one, people may or may not know that I'll be heading over to the US this summer. And as we arrive in America, we will be joining at the time of the Copa America. So for the first time, I'll be over on the soil and in the time zones in which the competition is actually taking place. And I'm thinking, well, I might actually be able to watch it properly for once. So that'll be quite good. I don't know when I'm going to be watching the Euros or how, but I think I'll probably be managed to do it because, you know, an 8 o'clock at night kickoff is like, I don't know, midday or something. And if it's an earlier kickoff, it'll still be morning time. So the Euros will be okay to track. And the Copa, I'll be able to watch in the evening. Fantastic. What does this mean? Well, Dylan and Reese, they both have American passports. They've got to become, this is where it all starts for them, supporting their other nation. So this week, I've ordered the USMNT away shirts for them, away kits for them. I love this kit. It's the blue,
white, red
at the bottom corner.
That's really nice.
I love this kit. It's so nice. I sometimes think that US kits are boring, and to be honest with you, I think their home kit is pretty boring. I quite like the collar, but I feel like they could have done something else on the shirt. It's just a white shirt. It's like the sort of thing you wear in a Sunday league team. But I think back to, yeah, that was our old-fashioned US kit. It was like the blue speckled one with all the white stars across it. Like, that was a really cool, proper American kit. And I feel like this red, blue, and white one is a proper American kit. So it's Reese's birthday in a couple of weeks. So he's got Reese 4 on the back of his shirt. It's going to be his fourth birthday. And Dylan's desperate to have a number 10 shirt. So he's going to have Dylan 10 on the back of his. So they'll be arriving soon. And I'm very excited about that, mate. I didn't order one for myself. I'm staying English till I die. And the other purchase that I made this week, have I told you before, right, about Dylan's obsession with the drink Prime?
You have indeed.
Yeah, so this drink obviously sometimes ruins my life. He's sees them on YouTube. There's all sorts of rare flavors you could get. Most of them typically taste the same. They just got different packaging on them. It's quite frustrating. The other day, actually, in the Easter holidays, I took the kids into London and we walked past this window which had all these bottles of Prime in the window for sale. And they're like, all the rare flavors that you can never see anywhere. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
And then I was kind of like, oh, actually, this could be good. Like, they can't be that expensive. And then I was like, how much are the Primes? Bear in mind, this is just a normal bottle of drink. And he's like, oh, they're all £30. What?
Sorry, what?
30 quid for a drink. No. Wow. I was like, no, Dylan, you're not doing it. Anyway, later on in the day, he did actually find a different bottle that he didn't have, and it was like £7 or something. So he got that. Anyway, yesterday...
Still, £7?
Oh, don't. But to be honest, some of the other gifts they were trying to get me to buy that day, it actually turned out to be a bargain. But yesterday, there's a new Prime out, Arsenal Prime. You can't really get it around here yet. Yesterday, I'm walking past Sports Direct. There's two bottles left, Arsenal Prime. Run in, grab them. That could be their after-school treat. They went back to school yesterday. So I surprised him after school. I said, lads, sit down, cover your eyes. Got something for you. Oh, they were so happy. And do you know what? Lovely. I think my favourite flavour so far, mate. Goldberry.
Is that a flavour?
G-O-A-L-B-E-R-R-Y, Goldberry. Beautiful, beautiful fruit.
Ollie Watkins beautiful is fruit. Sponsoring it, apparently.
Goldberry, I've never had the fruit. Tastes suspiciously like raspberries. I would say. Very much a raspberry flavored drink that has been dressed up differently and marketed extremely well. But it is actually quite nice, and it's just a normal price of £2.50. So I was very happy with the purchase. And I recommend that if you do see that flavour and it's normally priced, you get it and you try it.
Does it have like Arsenal badges all over it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bizarre. Yeah. Bizarre. Just, like, honestly, so weird. I found it weird when I went to the Emirates and they were selling it, to be honest. But it is what it is. This is the world that we now occupy.
It absolutely is. Just got to embrace it, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
If it was a Chelsea one, I wouldn't have, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, how far does this go?
Yeah, that wouldn't have gone that far, I promise.
No, absolutely. All right, well, on that note, I think it's probably time we call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
Mate, just got to say, as soon as we're closing, breaking news comes in from Fabrizio Romano. Man United are pushing their talks to extend Kobbie Mainoo's contract for this summer. They want him as one of the faces of the new project. We told you first on Ranks FC, you're not having that one, Fabrizio, you tapping merchant.
Fantastic. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. We'll be back Wednesday night, early Thursday morning with the Champions League takeaway, looking back at the second legs of all the quarterfinals that take place this week. And then there will be UEL Ultras and Friday Fiesta looks back at all the Europa League action on the Ranks FC Patreon. The link's in the description. As ever, we'd love for you to come over and join us over there. But for now, thanks a million for listening, and we'll see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy. Peace.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.